This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Sheikh Yusuf Estes. We're going to be talking about why priests and pastors are accepting Islam. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be with you, Steve.
You've been speaking on campus this week, sponsored by the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center, and you've just had a big open house today. How was the turnout for the open house at the mosque?
Actually, it was amazing. I never dreamed I'd see so many people come out in a little place like Champaign, Urbana. And as a matter of fact, not only did they have the number, the quantity is there, but the quality. I'm not used to having people of intellect and intelligence and compassion, and really the demonstration that I saw from the people here I was thinking, are these people rehearsing and coming out here, or what's going on? It was really swell.
Now, you've been here how many days in Champaign-Urbana?
I arrived on Thursday night. We did a program immediately at the university. Then on Friday, we had our regular services at the masjid and mosque, and then we had our program in the evening. And then Saturday, we had a program over there again. So I'm getting used to the university here. And by the way, it's big.
It is big. 38,000 students or so. Now, you spoke at the University Y, where I'm the director, on Saturday night. Last night. How was that program?
Again, it was a great turnout. We had a lot of people there. But what I really enjoyed is these after programs where they say questions and answers, etc. And then even after that, as you're walking out, people always stop you and say, well, I got one more thing I want to say, you know. And that was stimulating. I had that's where I catch the women right there, because they're a little shy maybe in public to just stand up and say things. But then they'll catch you afterwards. Well, what about this point or that point? And so this is really great. It was And I'm hoping, inshallah, God willing, that we're going to see that here with your call-ins. I'm hoping to see these lines start lighting up, and we're going to have people calling in and keep this thing going.
Well, let me give the numbers so that listeners can do that. In Champaign-Urbana, there are several local lines that can be accessed by punching in 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, the call letters of this station, of course. Elsewhere, you may call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. So anywhere the program is being heard, including on the internet, if you're in the continental U.S., you may pick up the phone by your computer and call 1-800-222-WILL and ask a question to our guest. Now, you've come to Champaign-Urbana from where?
Well, actually, I live now near Washington, D.C. I'm in Alexandria, Virginia. But originally, I'm from Texas, the Lone Star State, the Republic of Texas.
Now, you are a retired...
Where everything is bigger and better. I need to add that, by the way.
I understand. Now, you're the retired national chaplain for Muslims for the Federal Bureau of Prisons.
That's right.
How did you start doing that kind of work?
Well, I never dreamed I would be in that line of work, and I never dreamed I'd become a Muslim either. Those are two things that probably as far away from my mind as you could imagine 20 years ago. But what happened initially was that I met a Muslim and tried to convert him to Christianity.
So you were a Christian born and raised in Texas?
Not only that, I was a Christian born and raised and a born-again Christian.
Okay. So you were an evangelical Protestant Christian?
I wound up in that before it was all over with and thought that that was really the ultimate.
What denomination were you?
Originally, our whole family, actually came here in the 1660s and established what used to be called a Christian church, later became Disciples of Christ.
Okay. And the last name, Estes, am I saying that right?
You said it perfect. You're doing better than the Muslims.
Is that a Spanish name?
It comes from old Spain, when Spain was under Muslim rule.
Huh.
We didn't even know this until a few years ago, but our ancestry goes back to the Muslims of Spain. And what happened was that there was a lot of religious persecution at the time of the Inquisition. And our ancient ancestors left and they went into England, and their name had been Ustadh, which is in Arabic, it means professor. So they were the teachers and the professors of Islam. They left, they went to England seeking refuge there. They became Christians over the centuries. then, as I mentioned, they came here in the 1660s and were established in the Christian church.
So there was no time in there when your family in hundreds of years ago was Catholic?
I guess that's what they ran away from.
Okay.
Because that was the whole idea. If you couldn't come up with three, you know, when they did the Inquisition, it means to inquire, to ask, who is God? And if you couldn't say Father, Son, Holy Ghost, you were in big trouble.
So how did you make the change from being Disciples of Christ, one of the Protestant Christian groups, to converting to Islam?
This, of course, it takes a dissertation to cover the whole thing. So what I did, I published it on the Internet. So if somebody wants real details of this, what I would suggest is visit our website at www.islamalways.com, where we're always open 24 hours a day and always plenty of free parking. And now back to our program already in progress. Now, to give you the brief synopsis of the whole thing, what happened was I was trying to convert an Egyptian Muslim to become a Christian. In our dialogue, I found him very interested in what I was saying, to the extent that he says to me, I will go to your religion if it's better than my religion. Well, I said, okay, we got this guy. Fill up the tub. We're going to baptize him tonight. That's easy.
Now, were you clergy or were you a layperson?
I was a music minister, okay? And then as far as preaching goes, I was doing this with a small congregation. My father was an ordained minister. Hmm. And by the way, when it was all over with, all of us became Muslims.
So your father was an ordained minister in the Disciples of Christ. You became a music minister. And it was during that time that you had this conversation with the Egyptian you're telling us about.
Yep, but here's what the amazing thing was. I'm thinking that his statement, which is, I'll go to your religion if it's better than my religion, I'm thinking I've got this guy.
Yeah.
Because in Christianity, you don't have to pray five times a day, and he does as a Muslim. In Christianity, you don't have to fast the month of Ramadan, he does. And in Christianity, you don't have to do a pilgrimage anywhere. In fact, there's not a whole lot you have to do to be a Christian. But
just love your neighbor, which is not easy.
That's a commandment. You're right. That is true. You do have to be nice. I stand corrected because I said that last night in the speech, but I'm going to correct myself. You are right. That's Mark 12:29. And I give you a commandment like unto it, to love your neighbor as yourself. You're absolutely right. Okay. But anyway, back to the topic. He added something. He said, but you'll have to have proof. I said, proof? My degree's in theology, by the way. And I said to him, religion is not about proof. Religion is about faith. He said, you know, in Islam, we have both. And I said to him, you mean to tell me you can prove there's God? He said, yes. I said, okay, then where were you guys 150 years ago when Darwin was just a little monkey? He came back right away with, well, as a matter of fact, Islam is proving a lot of the things that the Western world isn't even really looking at these days. So over a period of time, we began to examine some of the proofs that Islam offers, such as the teachings of the Quran, the scientific miracles of the Quran, some of the prophecies made by Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and some of the very logical conclusions that are drawn from observing those things that come out of Islam. That was my introduction, but it wasn't the reason why I went to Islam. Mm-hmm. But it was something that opened up my mind to the extent that I have to say, okay, let me check this out a little bit further.
So your curiosity was piqued, and how did you proceed? Did you start reading the Quran?
No. No way. I'd been told by my preacher buddies that this is a book of the devil. Don't even get close to it. Hmm. Also, one of my friends used to be well known across the country because he carried his huge wooden cross, and he would go up and down the freeways and highways with this thing. People stop and visit with him about the Lord and so on. He told me, when I told him that I was trying to convert a Muslim, to stay away or you're going to get a demon in you. Hmm. I said, really? He said, oh, man, these guys are bad. Hmm. I remember, actually, Steve, when my dad first told me we're going to start doing business, one of our businesses we owned, We're going to do business with a guy from Egypt. I said, well, that's great. He said, and he's a Muslim. I said, oh, my God. Those guys are hijackers, terrorists, kidnappers. They don't believe in God. They worship a black box in the desert and they kiss the ground five times. They don't want nothing to do with them. And my dad said, no, come on. I want you to meet this guy. He's really nice. And, see for yourself. I told him, no, I'm not going to do it. My dad said, actually, you are, because you live in my house. And you're going to do what I say, and you're going to meet this guy.
How old were you then?
Oh, I was nearly 50.
Oh.
But like he said, I lived in his house. I said, okay, I'll do it. So what I did, told him that it has to be on my terms. He said, what's your terms? I said, I want to come straight from church. I want to have my cross with me, my Bible under my arm, which I always had anyway, and my cap that says Jesus is Lord right across the top. So this is how we proceeded, and we did that. I went in there and fully expected to meet some guy with long flowing robes and a big turban on his head, a huge beard, and eyebrows that go all the way from one side of the head to the other, and I'm totally expecting to see Ayatollah Khomeini with a sword and the whole bit. Well, I walk in, and there's just a guy standing there in regular clothes, and he had no beard. In fact, he didn't have any hair at all. He was bald. And I said, what's this? And I came to know a little bit more about this man, whose name was Muhammad. And I found that he was a geologist. He was a very compassionate and concerned person. I worked with him for a number of months, and I just began to realize that maybe I should learn more about this Islam and help convert these heathens over to Christianity.
You said your first degree was in theology. Did you go to a Bible college?
Actually, I did that through correspondence.
Oh,
to complete that, and that was in England.
I see. Mm-hmm. But it was with that background that you started to learn something about Islam.
You know, it was strange. I didn't want to know. I wasn't really trying to search for knowledge, but there were things, events that kept taking place that I couldn't explain. One of the things that happened, my friend with the cross had a heart attack. And he is formerly in the military, so he went to the Veterans Hospital in Oak Cliff, south of Dallas, and I would go there to visit him. One time while I was visiting him, a person sharing the room with him came wheeling in his wheelchair, and he looked very despondent and sad, and I said, well, let me witness to him. So I whip out the Bible, and I'm starting to talk to him about the Lord, and reading to him from the book of Jonah. Talking about the condition of Jonah while he was in the whale and that. And he said to me that he was not interested, and even told me he was from Venus or something like that. Just go away, leave me alone. But each day I would go, and each day I would talk to him. And finally he smiled at me one time, and he said, I'm sorry, I have to apologize. I've been real rude to you. And actually, you know, I appreciate what you're saying. He said, but I want to confess something to you. You're a preacher. I want to confess something to you. I said, let me tell you something. I'm not a priest. You don't confess to me. He said, I know you're not, because I am a priest. And that's what I wanted to tell you. And I said, really? He said, yes, I'm a Catholic priest. We became very good friends. And when he was released from the hospital, he came to live with us. It was actually through him that I learned a lot of the things about Islam. Because he told us that when you study to become a priest, you must study other religions, Islam being one of those. When I was in Pakistan once, I met another priest who had his PhD in Christianity, Catholicism actually, and his other PhD was in Islam. So there are a lot of people who know quite a bit about Islam amongst the clergy.
Now, when you finally made the decision yourself to become a Muslim, how did your family react?
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, okay, let me give you some background on that and then you see for yourself. What happened, first of all, was that we had been in Disciples of Christ for all these years, as I mentioned, and then for whatever reason, I suddenly decided I wanted to get really, really into the Bible. I began trying to study and learn from the languages of the old text from the scriptures, Hebrew and Koine Greek, not the Aramaic language. I never did look at that, but the Koine Greek, yes. Because I wanted to understand more really what the Bible said. I'd heard too many preachers quote things that are really not in the Bible. Or they would twist verses to the extent that it's not what it says, and he's justifying some kind of preaching that he's coming up with. So this started me on something. Along with that, I wanted to pray a lot, get closer to the Lord, spend more time with religious-type people, and stay away from those who don't necessarily inspire that kind of thinking. With that, I began to notice a change in how I perceived things, and I felt like that people needed to have more commitment and they needed to be saved. Even if they thought they were Christian, they still needed more than that. So in this mode, I go and visit my sisters, my mom, and I'm really preaching away at them. Now, they're already religious, but here I'm coming at them, telling them that just going to church and Sunday school isn't enough. There's got to be more. And we start talking about Bible studies. We start going into different areas of, you know, using our time for exploring how to be better Christians. And basically, I'm trying to save them or re-save them for the Lord. And they're like, okay, lighten up a little bit, you know. So now I've turned around and come back the other way, and I say, oh, by the way, I became a Muslim, and they're like, hello, what happened to you? Did you get hit in the head? I left a copy of the translation to English of the Quran in each one of my family's homes, and some of them did read it, and some of them read part of it, but there were others who just said, you know, get that book of the devil out of here. Mm. And where they heard that was from me to start with, you know. So I'm the one that told them, don't get close to Muslims. And repeating what I'd heard from other preachers, they're possessed or demons. They don't believe in God. They're pagans. They're infidels. And now here we're going the other way. So, yeah, they didn't respond to it at all, for the most part.
Were you married when you converted to Islam?
Actually, my wife was the one who made the commitment out loud first. She said it first, and it surprised me.
Was she also raised Christian?
Very much so. She was in the church called Agape, if you're familiar with Agape. It's a very small church, but the nice thing about it is they're very simple people, and they're straightforward worship of the Lord, and many are charismatic. Now, here's what happens. The Catholic priest tells me that there are a lot of things that this Muslim is saying that actually the church also accepts that this is true. I said, really? He said, yeah. So one day the Catholic priest, he'd come to live with us after he got out of the hospital, is talking to the Muslim, and he's saying to him, can I go to your church with you? He means the mosque, you know. So they go. Now, they were gone for a little while, and they came back. And we asked him, we took the priest aside. We said, now look, what are they doing there? Do they like slaughter some animals or are they building bombs? What are they doing there? He said, well, actually, they line up in a line. They stand there. They bow. They prostrate on the ground. They sit for a few moments and they leave. And it's all in silence. This is what's called the afternoon prayer. I said, really? What kind of music do they have? He said, they don't have any music. I said, no music? How in the world are you going to worship God without any music? And then I came to find out that Muslims don't have any music in their services except for the recitation of the Quran in a beautiful style. That's the only real sound that comes out of the worship services. Well, this went on for a while that we had discussions. Then at night we'd be talking about what our beliefs are. We'd try to explain Trinity and break it down into different understandings. The Muslim would say, well, in our religion, it's simple. God is one. He has no partners, and we don't have a Trinity. Then we would talk about salvation.
Similar to Judaism.
Well, very much. I mean, you know, the Jewish text, if you sit and read side by side with the Quran, you're going to find that there's so much there, you might be inclined to go along with what others have said, that Muhammad merely came along and just copied the old scripture and made it up. That's what a lot of people have said about it. And when you compare them, you can say, well, there are similarities. One of the things that's different, though, is that in the Quran, it accepts that Jesus is the coming of the Messiah and that he's coming back again. Now, that's in the Quran real clear that this is a virgin birth, miraculous conception, that Jesus walks amongst the people. He does miracles. He is the Word of God. And he performs such miracles that none can imagine, such as curing the sick and those that are lepers, giving sight to the blind, and even giving life to a person who had died, Lazarus, you know, the story.
Another similarity, perhaps, between Judaism and Islam that's very current in the last week or two is the second commandment, make no graven images of Allah, of God, in Judaism. And, of course, the controversy this last week about the cartoons that portrayed Muhammad and the reaction in the Muslim world to that. Is that a similarity?
You know what? You're the first person that brought that up. You're the first person that said it. I'm glad you said it. You know why? Because I didn't think about this before. A lot of people might think that we consider Muhammad as God. We don't. That's not the reason. But the second commandment is definitely something in Islam. There, you cannot make an image of God. You're absolutely right. This is a separate topic. A separate topic is the thing about the images, the cartoons of that people drew and said it was like Muhammad. No, this is an area where actually the Quran doesn't say that. It's from the sayings of Muhammad. He forbid people to draw any characters such as animals and human beings. And what he said was that this is forbidden and that whoever draws these creatures of any kind will be asked on the Day of Judgment to blow life into it, and they won't be able to. So he also mentioned that angels of mercy don't enter the rooms where there are pictures or dogs. That's why when Muslims have dogs, they keep them outside. Oh. They don't want dogs inside their house.
Interesting. Now, that's the teaching of Muhammad, but not part of the Quran, you say.
It indirectly is, because the Quran tells you that you have to follow the teachings of Muhammad.
I see. And where are those teachings found?
They're in a collection by Imam Bukhari, which he's from Samarkand, from Uzbekistan, Tashkent, actually. And his student, which is Imam Muslim, the two of them, had spent their whole entire lives collecting, authenticating, and then recording all of the teachings of Muhammad, and peace be upon him. There are others but those are the biggest ones.
Let me ask one quick question about that. When I referred to the Prophet Muhammad, I didn't say peace be upon him, because I'm never sure whether if a non-Muslim says that, that's a sign of respect, or if it's inappropriate. Can you help me?
Well, anything that you want to do that's good, it's going to help you. Uh-huh. So I would recommend to anybody who wants to do good deeds to do them, and that's a good deed.
All right.
But as far as it not offending me, it doesn't offend me. But sometimes what you're doing is helping me to remember my own religion. For us, we're not supposed to say his name unless we say that.
But that's also true when a Muslim even refers to Jesus, since he's considered a
Peace
prophet.
Be upon him.
You would also say that.
Yeah, we say, and actually the Arabic is more correct. When I'm saying it in English, I don't even know if it counts.
I see.
But the Arabic, you say, salam, salam, peace. Yeah. Well, in Hebrew, you say shalom.
Mm-hmm.
You want to hear a funny story the other night? Side issue?
Sure.
I was in Brooklyn, right? I was in the car. And I saw a friend of mine I haven't seen in years. He's from Egypt. So I rolled down the window. It's raining and that. It's at night, you know. And I said, Osama. That's his name. So all the people in Brooklyn, they're looking around like, hello, what's going on? Not again, help, you know. So he hollers back, oh, Yusuf. So the driver stopped the car, and I got out, and I ran over to him, and he ran toward me, and we were both saying, salam alaikum, okay. Now, here comes a man walking up to us, and he's a big guy, and kind of puzzled, staring at us. He's got a long black coat, black hat with the brim all the way around, thick glasses. He has black curly hair coming down on the sideburns. Huh? You know what I'm talking about. Hasidic Jew.
Sure.
He's coming straight to us, and he said to me in Hebrew, he said, do you speak Yiddish? To call him Yiddish. And I said back to him, la, no, we're speaking Arabia. And he said, but no, you said, shalom alaikum. I said, no, I didn't. I said, salam alaikum. which is very similar. Uh-huh. And so I extended my hand and I said, peace be with you, salam alaikum. He's shaking my hand. I said, we're Muslims. He pulled back his hand and looked at it like, uh-oh, what did I touch?
But it was a peaceful encounter.
Oh, it was really great. I liked it. It gave me a chance to talk to him and him to talk to us. He probably went back to his friends and said, I met a real Muslim. I don't know. What is that all about? They're talking our language here. But the Semitic languages, you probably know better than me, are very similar. The Aramaic language of Jesus, the Hebrew language of Moses, the Arabic language of Muhammad, peace be upon him, are having the same roots.
Let me take a minute to reintroduce our guest for listeners who may have tuned in after we began. Here on Keeping the Faith this week, our guest is Yusuf Estes, who is the retired national chaplain for the Federal Bureau of Prisons. He's in Champaign-Urbana for several days this week. He was at the open house at the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center on Lincoln Avenue this afternoon and gave two programs earlier this week at the university. We're talking today about why priests and pastors are accepting Islam, and Yusuf Estes is giving himself as a prime example of that, since he began as a music minister in the Disciples of Christ Church, one of the Protestant Christian denominations, describes himself as having been a born-again Christian. And so I guess it would be fair to say that you're an evangelical Christian. And would it be fair to say now that you're an evangelical Muslim?
I don't know about that, but I would like to address this thing about evangelical Christians, because sometimes I sat with those who considered anybody who wasn't with them to be totally out of the fold of everything. Mm. In other words, if you're not with us, you know, you're with the enemies, basically. Mm. You know, I know where we heard that before. You're either with us or you're with the terrorists. That comes right out of our good home state of Texas. But in fact, there's a lot of things, comparisons between the teachings of the Old Testament and the Quran, and New Testament and the Quran, that I like to call it the Old Testament, New Testament, and Last Testament, because they seem to very much have things in common. But there are contradictions between all three. You cannot say that the New Testament totally is in line with the Old Testament, because there's some very clear differences. And likewise, you can't say that either the Old or the New totally compare with the Quran. They don't. But there are enough similarities that certainly anybody would say that these folks should be able to get along pretty good. One of the, for instance, contrasting things that I might mention is that in the New Testament you have references to the Son of God. Okay? And by the way, for the benefit of those who didn't know this, the New Testament mentions that it's Adam, not Jesus, it's the Son of God, real clear. It's in the last chapter, the last verse of the chapter 3. It's verse 38 in Luke. It said that Enos is the son of Seth, and Seth is the son of Adam, and Adam's the son of God. So anyway, regardless of how you look at that, also you have Jesus calling himself Son of Man. If you look back in the Old Testament, in the book of Numbers, chapters 23, verse 19, and other verses, you'll find what means God is not a man. It says it clear, God is not a man that he should sin, and he's not the son of man that he should repent. Of course, a born-again is going to have a story for you on that, but the one who's Jewish, following the Jewish faith, is going to say, there's my proof right there. I'm not going to call somebody the son of God when you've got this clear verse right here. Now, in the Quran, you've got the verse which says, Lam yalid wa lam yulad, which is real clear that God is not the product of genealogy, nor does he beget. So whatever you look at as a human being is not God. That would be the teaching from Islam.
So was that a hard belief for you to accept coming from Christianity, where you had been thinking of Jesus as the Son of God, as part of the Trinity, to then, with the Quran's teaching, the prophet's teaching, that was not the case?
Not totally. I don't think it was as big a problem as it has been for others, because all of my life I had tried to deal with this issue, because I'd studied the Old Testament more than the New anyway. And so when I would look at it, I'd say, that doesn't fit the same issue. It doesn't look right. Additionally, if you look through the Old Testament, God there has made himself manifest real clear. You can understand this is a God who is definitely not in the creation walking around doing things. Whereas in the New Testament, he becomes real familiar to the extent you're calling him Father. You don't find that in the Old Testament, that image of this is my father and this is my son. You find some parables like that. For instance, the story of the prodigal son, etc. But you don't really say, I'm going to call on God as the Father. He's called the living God. Calling on Jehovah is calling on the living God.
We're about halfway through our program tonight on Keeping the Faith. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for the program. Our guest tonight is Sheikh Yusuf Estes, the retired national chaplain for Muslims in the Federal Bureau of Prisons. We'll be talking more with him in just a moment about why priests and pastors are accepting Islam and more of his personal story of moving from being a Protestant Christian to being a Muslim. If you have questions or comments for our guest, do call us. 1-800-222-9455 is a toll-free number. It can be used anywhere in the country, including people who are listening on the internet at will.uiuc.edu. In Champaign-Urbana, there are several local lines. You may reach us at 333-9455. Keeping the Faith is supported in part by the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director. The Y is the oldest religious institution at the university, the oldest student organization. It was founded 133 years ago here on this campus. The Y sponsors many programs. One is called Know Your University, and this Tuesday, the president of the University of Illinois, B. Joseph White, will be our speaker. That's Tuesday, February 21, this coming Tuesday. He'll be talking about the future of the university from his perspective. The lecture is free. People may come and buy a lunch if they like. Do call us if you're going to be coming and wanting to get lunch at the Thai eatery so we can know how much food to have ready. The number to make a reservation is 337-1500, 337-1500 to make a reservation for lunch. But even if you forget, do come and hear the talk, and we'll find food for you somewhere. That's this Tuesday at noon, President Joseph White. Friday at the Y, Kent Ono, who's director of the Center of Democracy for a Multiracial Society at the university, will be talking about race in relation to democracy. That's Friday Forum, Friday, February 24 at the Y. Same procedure. If you'd like to come and have a lunch, do give us a call, 337-1500 on Monday, so we'll know how much food to have ready for Friday. The Y is eager to accept donations of vehicles. That's one of the ways friends support the Y and its programs. If you'd like to donate a car or a truck or a motorcycle, van, boat, anything with a title, you can deduct the price that we sell that for as a charitable deduction. That helps the Y and may help you avoid selling it yourself or dealing with a trade-in. So consider making a donation to the Y. Call me, Steve Shoemaker, during the week, 337-1500. Well, we have a couple callers waiting to talk to our guest today, Sheikh Yusuf Estes. Let's go first to line number one. You're on the air with our guest. Go ahead, please.
Yes. I was just wondering, since you worked in the federal prison system, if you might be able to address some issues with that. I don't have any specific questions, but just if you could talk about some of the problems you encountered, either with the government or with the prisoners, and how it is that you got to be in charge of Muslim prisoners, I don't know, of Muslim chaplains in the federal system.
Well, that's a good question, and we thank you very much for calling. And okay. We appreciate all the folks that are contributing to our program by listening and calling in like this. We hope more of you will do the same. I'm glad you asked me about the prison system, because I usually don't get to talk about that very much. I never dreamed that I would even want to go into a prison. And even if you knew you could come out, a lot of people still are intimidated by the concept of it and say, forget about that. I don't want to go in there even for 2 minutes.
It's not very pleasant.
No, it's not. That's a prison. But what I found in there when I first went in was because it was an invitation of a county jail to go in and talk to some inmates about their religion. Because they have a right. Everybody in the United States is an American citizen. You have rights. Even as a prisoner, you still have some rights.
Now, was that when you were a Christian or when you were a Muslim?
As a Muslim.
As a Muslim.
Okay. Yeah, I was called in as a Muslim.
Okay.
Chaplain. Well, I wasn't a chaplain at the time. I was just called in as a Muslim speaker on the subject.
Sure.
When I went there and I found the condition, there were so many Muslims. And I was thinking, what in the world makes Muslims so much bad, more bad or badder? Worse than, okay, there we go, than everybody else, that there's so many, because it's about 8 to 10% of the population of inmates are Muslims. Then I came to find out that most of them accepted Islam in the prison. And I said, now what's up with this? And many of them are African American. I said, you know what, this needs to have some study. Well, in my studies of the subject, I began to realize that this was a great opportunity to share a message with people who were really interested in it, wanted to know about it, and had time to really research and think about it. Then I had the offer that came to me to go and visit a federal prison. I went. The inmates loved me. The staff there, the people in charge of the chaplaincy, really liked me. We got along fine, and they said, would you consider coming on a regular basis? And there was a Catholic priest in charge.
Now, was this in Texas?
Yeah, all of that was in Texas originally.
Where prisons are particularly notorious.
Actually, you believe it or not, there are some states that have more prisons in Texas.
Really?
But we do now have some of the biggest federal prisons. Mm-hmm. The new one in Beaumont, Port Arthur area, is huge.
Huh.
Yeah, I handle up to 5,000 inmates.
Wow.
Yeah. But in any case, one thing led to another, and it finally wound up that I was a regular volunteer, and then I became an assigned volunteer. Then later I became on the contractor staff and then just went right up the line. Mm. And it became that I was servicing different parts of Texas, then into Louisiana, then into Florida, and then over to California.
Caller, did you want to follow up with something, specific question?
Well, I was wondering, then you worked with Orthodox Muslims, not with what used to be called the Nation of Islam.
I did work with them a little bit. Not that they were too interested to hear what I had in the beginning, but in later years, their leader, which is Louis Farrakhan, ordered them to begin to learn the Arabic language. Well, that kind of forced them to turn to us because we're the only ones who know the Arabic in the prison system.
So you had learned Arabic?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
That's early one.
I highly recommend that, even for non-Muslims to learn it. Mm-hmm. By the way, I already stuck one of my commercials in there before you could stop me. I'll do it again, www.arabicinenglish.com. That's not open yet, but it's almost ready to go. I saw the promos for it over the weekend. It's a fun way to learn the Arabic language for English speakers who just want to know what's going on with these Arabs, what's really being said. If you don't trust the news, if you don't trust with the media on what's being said or brought to you, or if you just want to know what these guys are talking about, be able to read the paper and so on in Arabic, we're offering it absolutely free on that website. It should be ready next week.
Who's the we? We that's offering it.
The we is me and my wife and my daughters and my friends who have helped me put this thing together in my studio in my basement.
I see. All right.
But it was fun doing it. It really was. When you see it, you can see me joking around, showing how to use the letters, understand it. If you know Hebrew, you read it from the right side of the page to the left. Same way with Arabic.
Okay.
So that's on there, too.
Caller, any last question?
No, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for asking. Appreciate it. Let me move to another caller who's waiting on line two. Thank you for being patient. Go right ahead, line two.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
On the air. Okay. I have a couple of questions for Sheikh Yusuf. Good evening.
Hello. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for being on the air. I don't know if you're aware of this, but there are a lot of Muslims who are proselytizing on the internet, and they're using a story with the headline that former priest converts to Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went actually to your website and checked out, I don't think there are any indication that you read a former priest or an ordained minister. So is that correct?
Actually, it says priests and preachers enter Islam.
Yeah, but are you yourself?
And if you read the story, you'll see that the person, I didn't finish telling the story just now, but the person that entered Islam first was the priest.
Okay, but I'm asking about you yourself.
I wasn't even a Catholic. How would I be a priest?
Well, there's a problem. The Muslims who are proselytizing actually say the story about you being a former priest.
Well, I don't know what other people say, but if they'll just link to our website, they're welcome to do that. If they link to our website, it very clearly tells the whole story of priests, preachers, and a minister. All of us came to Islam. The rest of the story, I'm sure you want to know it, because otherwise why would you call and ask? So I will finish it for you. And that is that the priest went back to the mosque again, and while he was there, he became a Muslim. And when he came home, he told us that he had entered into Islam, and it shocked me. I couldn't believe that a priest would enter into Islam.
He was a friend of yours before?
He's the one I met in the hospital.
What was his name?
Yeah, his name was Father Peter Jacobs.
Peter
Jacobs. Okay. Father Peter Jacobs. Okay. He had been 14 years working in South America, Central America, Mexico, Hell's Kitchen in New York, and done a lot of missionary work for the Catholic Church. Mm. And he was very astute in his particular area in the study of the scriptures and so on, and was well familiar with the different languages. So he was very inspirational to us to know more about this. But as far as what you're saying, I want to finish the story, and then I want to come back to what you said, actually. I went upstairs to my wife, and I started talking to her about this priest entering Islam, and then I came to find out that she also wanted to become a Muslim. And now I was really shocked. So I had to do some soul-searching. I took my friend out for a long walk, and while we talked, he said, "This is not about you and me. This is between you and God." And I thought about that. I said, "That's right." He said, "Islam means to surrender to God's will, to do the will of God on earth as it is in heaven." And that's so much like what we find in the Bible in the Lord's Prayer. I said, "Do you mean to tell me that Islam is a verb rather than a noun?" He said, "Absolutely. Whoever believes there's one God and he's submitting to God's will, whether he knows it or not, he's being a Muslim."
Caller, did you want to follow up with a specific question?
Actually, that was not exactly what I was referring to. I mean, I read the story too, but the problem is, you whether you like it or not, you're being used into these propaganda messages. And I was just wondering, would you like to make a disclaimer on your website that you're neither a priest nor a former minister?
Because actually, I'm sorry. Excuse me. What I said was, and perhaps you didn't catch this, I said I wasn't Catholic, nor was I a priest. I definitely was a preacher of Christianity, okay?
Yes. But
okay, so there's no need for a disclaimer. And by the way, the story is about several people. It is plural. It says priests. It says preachers. I would like to share with you something else. The English language is very deficient when you try to translate on many issues in religion. However, in the Arabic, they use a general term when they translate the word preacher or minister or priest. They use the word qassis. And the word qassis really means a priest. So when people translate it to Arabic and then translate it back to English, it comes out saying that I was the priest, and in fact I was the preacher, not the priest. So I know I wasn't Catholic, but in our website it very clearly states all of that. And if there's any mistake in there, we're really happy to correct that. But, you know, if it really bothers you, I could suggest you could find a lot of other things to do on the Internet.
Now, Islam is unusual in that it doesn't. There's no specified clergy or method to become something parallel to a priest or a
minister.
We
don't have clergy.
Right? That's what I'm saying.
Islam doesn't have clergy. That's however, right. We definitely have imams.
Teachers.
Uh-huh. No, imam is a leader.
A leader.
And if you want to be
spiritual leader?
Yeah. More than that. It's the one that leads prayers. If you want to be the imam, you've got to learn Arabic.
But can't anyone lead prayers in Islam?
No. You have to know Arabic, you have to study the Quran, and you have to memorize the Quran. Because if you can't do it, you can't lead the prayer, because it has to be all in Arabic. Okay. It's preferred you memorize the whole entire Quran in the Arabic language.
What's the difference between an imam and an ayatollah?
Well, ayatollah is a corruption of a word from Arabic. That's Farsi. Or Persian language, that they're saying is Ayatollah, meaning a proof of God, a manifestation of God. That's what it means.
Hmm.
So, but that's only, you're going to find that amongst the Shiites and a lot of, you know, in Iran.
Which branch of Islam are you part of?
None. I don't branch off. I just stay with the mainstream Islam, period. Uh-huh. It's funny. I'm glad you asked me that. Because what happened when I was asked, when I come back in the country, in customs, they wanted to know about, okay, who are you, where are you going, what are you doing, and this kind of thing. And they asked me, so which flavor of Islam are you? And I said, well, none. And they kept insisting, you have to be something. And I said, look, I'm only a Christian who became a Muslim. They said, okay, I'm a Christian Muslim. They wrote that down and said, you can go.
I see. We have another caller waiting. Let me thank the previous caller for his question. Let's move to our toll-free line, line number 4. You're on the air, Keeping the Faith, with our guest, Yusuf Estes.
Hi. The question is, I think it's maybe in support of the speaker about parallels in religions. I think in Judaism there are also no priests as rabbis are teachers in similar way that imams are. They have no special relationship with God as prescribed by religion. And something about the Old Testament and not having reference to God as a father, since Torah is kind of close to the Old Testament, and in the Hebrew prayers, you say sort of Baruch Ata, and then which I believe means Blessed Father. So that's sort of a comment, and I'd like to hear the speaker comment on the parallels. Thank you.
Now, that's excellent. First of all, I thank you for the first thing and the second, but on the first subject, you actually said it better than me. And I wish I would have said, and you could have coached me before I got started, because that actually is a good representation to mention this, that in Islam, as in Judaism, we don't really have people that are holy. That's what I should have said, because we do have teachers. We have, they have everything from mudaris, we have, which means a teacher. We have imams, which we mentioned, leaders, mullahs. There are, as you mentioned, the ayatollah, which, of course, that's not in the mainstream Islam, but that's for the Shiites, of course. Then there is another one, which is called professor, which is ustad. And that is really where my last name comes from, is the word Estes today. Comes from when Spain was ruled by the Muslims for about 700 years or so. And so that word, or usted, became estaz with a Z, and then later with the S when we came over here from England. So that was a real good point you made. We don't consider any of these men holy, like they're going to be in a better status with God than somebody who's a layman, but it means that they're dedicating their lives to something. We don't really have anything exactly like they do in Christianity, where you have... for instance, in Catholicism, you have the father, then you have the priest, the archpriest, the bishop, the archbishop, the cardinal, the pope, etc. So there isn't a hierarchy of clergy within the mainstream Islam. However, some branches do have things like this.
When you became a chaplain, did you have to get approved by some
Absolutely.
Group in Islam?
No, not by, no. Actually, I was recommended by the local mosque that was there, and also from several schools that I had attended. But the main thing was that the population within the institution very much wanted me to come and be with them. They mm-hmm. requested it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about one of the terms that one of our callers asked you about, and that is proselytizing. You yourself made a choice and came to Islam from Christianity. And in your talk, it sounds like you think that's a good thing for other people to do. Do you make any apologies for trying to persuade people now to become Muslims, just as you previously were trying to persuade people to become Christian?
Well, I think that we might clarify a couple of things on that. Number one was, if you were listening real close, you noticed I said that before I entered Islam, the gentleman told me, this is not about between you and me. Mm-hmm. It's between you and God. He then sent me off to go do whatever you want to do. Pray to your God, whoever you believe in, and see where he guides you. And that's mm-hmm. exactly what I did. Mm-hmm. So that part of it, it has to be left up to the individual. But as far as communicating to people, this is responsibility of every Muslim, that they must tell people about what they know and then let them make a decision. So
is that something enjoined on Muslims in the Quran?
Yes.
Is it?
It's very clear that you are here for only one purpose. The quote in Arabic is in chapter 55, verse 56, and it's called Surah Al-Dariyat, and it says, وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. And the clear proof here in this, from that verse alone, says that the only purpose for which you were created is for worshiping your Lord. another verse in chapter 3, verse 110, and that's Surah Al Imran, and it says, "Kuntun khayra umatin ukhrijat lin-nasi ta'muruna bil ma'ruf wa tanhauna 'anil munkar wa tu'minuna billah." And this says that you're the best of people raised up because you do call to what is right, righteous, and good, and you forbid what is unrighteous and evil and bad, and you believe in Allah. But then I want to read the rest of this verse. Most of the scholars don't read it because it doesn't seem like it's applicable. But it continues in the same verse, and it said, "And if the people of the Bible, Jews and Christians, had believed, it would be better for them. From them you will find believers, but most of them are disobedient." Now, that answers a lot of questions that people might have. What does Islam say about Jews and Christians? It didn't say they're not believers. In fact, it said the opposite. From them are believers, but most of them are disobedient. Mm-hmm. And if you looked at the Ten Commandments, you can decide for yourself, do all the people follow the Ten Commandments or not? Do they keep the Sabbath or do they keep Sunday? Because they're not the same day.
We're down to our last 6 or 7 minutes of this program, Keeping the Faith, with our guest today, Sheikh Yusuf Estes. We're talking about conversion in his case from Christianity to Islam. If you have a question or comment, we can still get in one or two calls. 333-9455 is the number in Champaign-Urbana. That'll get you to several lines. Elsewhere, we have a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Eager to have you join the conversation.
You know, Steve, I want to say something.
Sure.
To our caller who was listening, I hope you're still with us, that asked us about a disclaimer for the website. You gave me a good idea. Now that I've had time to think about it a little bit, I think I would like to put something on there that says, because we tell people, our statement on the bottom of our pages says that they're free to copy, but it does say without alteration. So I think what I'll do is add something to that that says that if they do copy, they have to copy all of it, and they have to translate it responsibly.
I think that's
a good idea.
Now, the website you're referring to is
IslamAlways.com. Yeah.
www.islamalways.com.
I got a side issue for you.
What's that?
Why do we say W? Have you ever looked at it? It looks like two V's.
It should be double V.
And
it takes three syllables to say it instead of just one for all the other letters. It seems so strange.
Yeah,
I usually just say dub, dub, dub.
We have another caller. You could be from Texas. W. Never mind.
Let's not get into that. We have a caller waiting on line one for our guest on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, line one, number one.
I'd like to say thank you to our speaker, and I'd also like to ask, can you just touch a little bit about the difference between the way that Christians speak to non-Christians and try to convince them to come to Christianity versus the way that Muslims speak to non-Muslims about Islam, and what is the difference in the way that, I guess, they try to convince, other people of the truth of their particular religion?
Well, if we got time for a seminar. I don't think so. But let me just
do it in 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Let me take a deep breath. Here we go. Hold on. First of all, thank you, sister, so much for calling in, and we really appreciate that. That's very sweet. It's a good question. Actually, I can't speak for all Christians, nor can I speak for all Muslims. I have observed some wonderful Christians, and their methodology is very nice and did some good job. And I've observed some others. Maybe I was guilty of that, of being pushy, forceful, and, condescending and all the rest of it. Blaming myself, nobody else, only. Okay, don't get upset. And then in Islam, I've also seen people use a very good approach, soft approach, nice, proper. This is what we have. Hope you like it. If not, okay, we're still friends. And then I've also seen those who are so violent in their, don't even want to talk to other people. They're just like, okay, you're an infidel and you're going to hell and the heck with you. And
isn't there another variation too? Because I know some Muslims who don't agree with your approach that think that their primary job as a Muslim is to try to persuade or present Islam to others, but simply see it as their choice and are happy to leave Jews or Christians or Hindus or whatever to their own way.
I thought I said that.
Did you? Okay.
I don't know. Let's play the tape back.
I may have misunderstood.
Okay, starting again. Thank you very much for the call. And no, never mind. Okay. We are going to have this on the line internet later, right? people will be able to hear it later?
They will. That's right.
Really?
This will be archived. This program will be archived. And it'll be up on the Internet in about 2 weeks.
2 weeks from now?
Yeah.
I hope, by the way, all you guys listening to this program will tune in here regularly, listen to Steve Shoemaker with his program, because this is a great chance for you, whatever faith you are, to not only hear from other faiths, but be able to call in and express yourself. And I think we still have a caller on here. So
yes.
I just wanted to tell you how much this is needed around the country. People need to speak. And by the way, I could be wrong, okay? And I accept that. I accept I could be totally wrong, partially wrong, but I will not accept that I'm totally right, because
but
I am
human.
But
I interrupted you. You were saying, pointing out some of the differences between the way you previously, as a Christian, tried to
convince people.
Convince people, and say again what you think you what you.
I think our role, based on what I learned from the Quran in the Arabic language and the teachings of Muhammad, our role is merely to tell the people there's only one God. You have to worship him on his terms, and your relationship with him is what it's all about. And if you're asking for guidance, then you're going to be guided by him. There's a famous statement of Muhammad, which we find very similar in the New Testament. Ask and you'll receive, seek and you'll find, knock and it'll be opened. Asking God for guidance and seeking for his will is what it's about. Knocking on that old hard heart of ours, and then the first chapter of the Quran is called the opening, and it's so beautiful.
Caller, follow-up question, real quick?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for calling.
Anything else on that contrast?
Yeah, do you mind if I just tell you what that referred to?
Sure.
It says in the Quran, more or less the translation, then the opening chapter is called the opening. It says, in the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful, the ruler on the day of judgment. And it's telling us here, all the praises for God, the most gracious, the most merciful, the ruler on the day of judgment. You only do we worship. You only do we turn to for guidance. Guide us on the straight path, the path of those who have your favor, not the path of those who have your anger, nor those who go astray. And that's pretty much it.
Tell us in 30 seconds about the group that brought you here to Champaign-Urbana this week.
Well, actually, it was our first chance to get to work with them. We're really excited about that, especially the way they put that open house together. We hope they'll bring us back again to visit with them in the Islamic community here and visit with both Muslims and non-Muslims.
And the specific organization is called?
Muslim Women's Outreach.
Okay.
The division that brought us, yes. It was mentioned on the Internet as well. And this has been well organized and well done, which is really a surprise for me. I'm not used to this excellent treatment and the way things all fell together.
Well, thank you very much, Yusuf Estes, retired chaplain, national chaplain for Islam with the Federal Bureau of Prisons, who's been our guest today, talking about his own conversion from Christianity to Islam. Thanks also to our callers. Next week here on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking with Hillel Hakim, an Israeli journalist, about Christian churches and Israel. The following week, March 5th, Alicia Banks will be our guest, talking about the mission of the YWCA to eliminate racism and empower women. And then on March 12th, Hazen Jabbar will be our guest, talking about the life of the Prophet Muhammad. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Mark Sundin got an offer he couldn't refuse. A publisher paid him up front to write a book on bullfighting in Spain, but Mark doesn't speak Spanish, knows nothing about bullfighting, and hates to travel. He still wrote the book. He just made the whole thing up. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, The Art of Faking It. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy and not as cold, with a low around 13 degrees and west winds around 10 miles per hour, becoming light. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a high in the mid-30s and southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 20s and southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour.
Hi, I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser, reminding you that the same weather team you rely on during the day on AM 580 brings you accurate, in-depth weather at night on WILL-TV. Be more prepared. Watch your weather weeknights at 9:58 on our companion station, WILL-TV. This is the Information Advantage, WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the University of Illinois.
It's 6 p.m.